Serampore is but 12 miles from Calcutta, yet in those regions I had never caught a glimpse of my guru. We had to travel for our meeting to the ancient city of Kazi, Benares, hallowed by memories of Lahiri Mahasaya. Here too the feet of Buddha, Shankaracharya and other yogi crusts had blessed the soil. You will come to me in 4 weeks. For the first time, Sri Yukteswar's voice was stern. Now I have told my eternal affection, and have shown my happiness at finding you. That is why you disregard my request. The next time we meet, you will have to reawaken my interest. I won't accept you as a disciple easily. There must be complete surrender by obedience to my strict training. I remained obstinately silent. My guru easily penetrated my difficulty. Do you think your relatives will laugh at you? I will not return. You will return in 30 days. Never. Bowing reverently at his feet, I departed without lightening the controversial tension. As I made my way in the midnight darkness, I wondered why the miraculous meeting had ended on an inharmonious note. The dual scales of Maya, that balance every joy with a grief. My young heart was not yet malleable to the transforming fingers of my guru. The next morning I noticed increased hostility in the attitude of the hermitage members. My days became spiked with invariable rudeness. In 3 weeks, Dayananda left the ashram to attend a conference in Bombay. Pandemonium broke over my hapless head. Mukunda is a parasite, accepting hermitage hospitality without making proper return. Overhearing this remark, I regretted for the first time that I had obeyed the request to send back my money to father. With heavy heart, I sought out my soul friend, Jitendra. I am leaving. Please convey my respectful regrets to Dayanandaji when he returns. I will leave also. My attempts to meditate here meet with no more favor than your own. Jitendra spoke with determination. I have met a Christ-like saint. Let us visit him in Serampore. And so the bird prepared to swoop perilously close to Calcutta. Chapter 11. Two penniless boys in Brindaban. Tea would serve you right if father disinherited you, Imyakunda. How foolishly you are throwing away your life. An elder brother sermon was assaulting my ears. Jitendra and I, fresh from the train, a figure of speech merely, we were covered with dust, had just arrived at the home of Ananta, recently transferred from Calcutta to the ancient city of Agra. Brother was a supervising accountant for the Bengal Nagpur Railway. You well know, Ananta, I seek my inheritance from the Heavenly Father. Money first. God can come later. Who knows? Life may be too long. God first, money is his slave. Who can tell? Life may be too short. My retort was summoned by the exigencies of the moment, and held no presentiment. Yet the leaves of time unfolded to early finality for Ananta. A few years later he entered the land where banknotes avail neither first nor last. Wisdom from the hermitage, I suppose. But I see you have left Benares. Ananta's eyes gleamed with satisfaction. He yet hoped to secure my pinions in the family nest. My sojourn in Benares was not in vain. I found there everything my heart had been longing for. You may be sure it was not your pundit or his son. Ananta joined me in reminiscent laughter. He had to admit that the Benares clairvoyant he selected was a short-sighted one. What are your plans, my wandering brother? Jitendra persuaded me to Agra. We shall view the beauties of the Taj Mahal here, I explained. Then we are going to my newly found guru, who has a hermitage in Serampore. Ananta hospitably arranged for our comfort. Several times during the evening I noticed his eyes fixed on me reflectively. I know that look. I thought. A plot is brewing. The denouement took place during our early breakfast. So you feel quite independent of father's wealth. Ananta's gaze was innocent as he resumed the barbs of yesterday's conversation. I am conscious of my dependence on God. Words are cheap. Life has shielded you thus far. What applied if you were forced to look to the invisible hand for your food and shelter? You would soon be begging on the streets. Never. I would not put faith in passers-by rather than God. He can devise for his devotee 1,000 resources besides the begging bowl. More rhetoric. Suppose I suggest that your vaunted philosophy be put to a test in this tangible world? I would agree. Do you confine God to a speculative world? We shall see. Today you shall have opportunity either to enlarge or to confirm my own views. Ananta paused for a dramatic moment, then spoke slowly and seriously. I propose that I send you and your fellow disciple Jitendra this morning to the nearby city of Brindaban. You must not take a single rupee, you must not beg, either for food or money, you must not reveal your predicament to anyone, you must not go without your meals, and you must not be stranded in Brindaban. If you return to my bungalow here before 12 o'clock tonight, without having broken any rule of the test, I shall be the most astonished man in Agra. I accept the challenge. No hesitation was in my words or in my heart. Grateful memories flashed of the instant beneficence, my healing of deadly cholera through appeal to Lahiri Mahasaya's picture, the playful gift of the two kites on the Lahore roof with Amma, the opportune amulet amidst my discouragement, the decisive message through the unknown Benares Sadhu outside the compound of the pundit's home, the vision of Divine Mother and her majestic words of love, her swift heed through Master Mahasaya to my trifling embarrassments, the last-minute guidance which materialized my high school diploma, and the ultimate boon, my living master from the midst of lifelong dreams. Never could I admit my philosophy unequal to any tussle on the world's harsh proving ground. Your willingness does you credit. I'll escort you to the train at once. Ananta turned to the open-mouthed Jitendra. You must go along as a witness and, very likely, a fellow victim. A half hour later Jitendra and I were in possession of one-way tickets for our impromptu trip. We submitted, in a secluded corner of the station, to a search of our persons. Ananta was quickly satisfied that we were carrying no hidden hoard, our simple duties concealed nothing more than was necessary. As faith invaded the serious realms of finance, my friend spoke protestingly. Ananta, give me 1 or 2 rupees as a safeguard. Then I can telegraph you in case of misfortune. Jitendra. My ejaculation was sharply reproachful. I will not proceed with the test if you take any money as final security. There is something reassuring about the clink of coins. Jitendra said no more as I regarded him sternly. Mukunda, I am not heartless. A hint of humility had crept into Ananta's voice. It may be that his conscience was smiting him, perhaps for sending 2 insolvent boys to a strange city, perhaps for his own religious skepticism. If by any chance or grace you pass successfully through the brind of an ordeal, I shall ask you to initiate me as your disciple. This promise had a certain irregularity, in keeping with the unconventional occasion. The eldest brother in an Indian family seldom bows before his juniors. He receives respect and obedience second only to a father. But no time remained for my comment. Our train was at point of departure. Jitendra maintained a lugubrious silence as our train covered the miles. Finally he bestirred himself, leaning over. He pinched me painfully at an awkward spot. I see no sign that God is going to supply our next meal. Be quiet. Doubting Thomas, the Lord is working with us. Can you also arrange that he hurry? Already I am famished merely at the prospect before us. I left Benares to view the Taj's mausoleum, not to enter my own. Cheer up, Jitendra. Are we not to have our first glimpse of the sacred wonders of Brindaban? I am in deep joy at thought of treading the ground hallowed by feet of Lord Krishna. The door of our compartment opened, 2 men seated themselves. The next train stop would be the last. Young lads, do you have friends in Brindaban? The stranger opposite me was taking a surprising interest. None of your business. Rudely I averted my gaze. You are probably flying away from your families under the enchantment of the Stealer of Hearts. I am of devotional temperament myself. I will make it my positive duty to see that you receive food, and shelter from this overpowering heat. No. Sir, let us alone. You are very kind, but you are mistaken in judging us to be truants from home. No further conversation ensued, the train came to a halt. As Jitendra and I descended to the platform, our chance companions linked arms with us and summoned a horse cab. We alighted before a stately hermitage, set amidst the evergreen trees of well-kept grounds. Our benefactors were evidently known here. A smiling lad led us without comment to a parlor. We were soon joined by an elderly woman of dignified bearing. Gauri Ma, the princes could not come. One of the men addressed the ashram hostess. At the last moment their plans went awry, they send deep regrets. But we have brought two other guests. As soon as we met on the train, I felt drawn to them as devotees of Lord Krishna. Goodbye, young friends. Our two acquaintances walked to the door. We shall meet again, if God be willing. You are welcome here. Gauri Ma smiled in motherly fashion on her two unexpected charges. You could not have come on a better day. I was expecting two royal patrons of this hermitage. What a shame if my cooking had found none to appreciate it. These appetizing words had disastrous effect on Jitendra. He burst into tears. The prospect he had feared in Brindaban was turning out as royal entertainment. His sudden mental adjustment proved too much for him. Our hostess looked at him with curiosity, but without remark. Perhaps she was familiar with adolescent quirks. Lunch was announced. Gauri Ma led the way to a dining patio, spicy with savory odors. She vanished into an adjoining kitchen. I had been premeditating this moment. Selecting the appropriate spot on Jitendra's anatomy, I administered a pinch as resounding as the one he had given me on the train. Doubting Thomas, the Lord works in a hurry, too. The hostess re-entered with a punkah. She steadily fanned us in the oriental fashion as we squatted on ornate blanket seats. Ashram disciples passed to and fro with some 30 courses. Rather than meal, the description can only be sumptuous repast. Since arriving on this planet, Jitendra and I had never before tasted such delicacies. Dishes fit for princes indeed, honored mother. What your royal patrons could have found more urgent than attending this banquet, I cannot imagine. You have given us a memory for a lifetime. Silenced as we were by Ananta's requirement, we could not explain to the gracious lady that our thanks held a two penniless boys in Brindaban double significance. Our sincerity at least was patent. We departed with her blessing and an attractive invitation to revisit the hermitage. The heat outdoors was merciless. My friend and I made for the shelter of a lordly kadamba tree at the ashram gate. Sharp words followed. Once again Jitendra was beset with misgivings. A fine mess you have got me into. Our luncheon was only accidental good fortune. How can we see the sights of this city, without a single pice between us? And how on earth are you going to take me back to Ananta's? You forget God quickly, now that your stomach is filled. My words, not bitter, were accusatory. How short is human memory for divine favors? No man lives who has not seen certain of his prayers granted. I am not likely to forget my folly in venturing out with a madcap like you. Be quiet, Jitendra. The same Lord who fed us will show us Brindaban, and return us to Agra. A slight young man of pleasing countenance approached at rapid pace. Halting under our tree, he bowed before me. Dear friend, you and your companion must be strangers here. Permit me to be your host and guide. It is scarcely possible for an Indian to pale, but Jitendra's face was suddenly sickly. I politely declined the offer. You are surely not banishing me? The stranger's alarm would have been comic in any other circumstances. Why not? You are my guru. His eyes sought mine trustfully. During my midday devotions, the blessed Lord Krishna appeared in a vision. He showed me two forsaken figures under this very tree. One face was yours, my master. Often have I seen it in meditation. What joy if you accept my humble services. I too am glad you have found me. Neither God nor man has forsaken us. Though I was motionless, smiling at the eager face before me, uninward obeisance cast me at the divine feet. Dear friends, will you not honor my home for a visit? You are kind, but the plan is unfeasible. Already we are guests of my brother Inagra. At least give me memories of touring Brindaban with you. I gladly consented. The young man, who said his name was Pratap Chatterjee, hailed a horse carriage. We visited Madanamohana temple and other Krishna shrines. Night descended while we were at our temple devotions. Excuse me while I get sandish. Pratap entered a shop near the railroad station. Jitendra and I sauntered along the wide street, crowded now in the comparative coolness. Our friend was absent for some time, but finally returned with gifts of many sweetmeats. Please allow me to gain this religious merit. Pratap smiled pleadingly as he held out a bundle of rupee notes and two tickets, just purchased, to Agra. The reverence of my acceptance was for the invisible hand. Scoffed at by Ananta, had its bounty not far exceeded necessity? We sought out a secluded spot near the station. Pratap, I will instruct you in the Kriya of Lahiri Mahasaya, the greatest yogi of modern times. His technique will be your guru. The initiation was concluded in a half hour. Kriya is your Chintamani, I told the new student. The technique, which as you see is simple, embodies the art of quickening man's spiritual evolution. Hindu scriptures teach that the incarnating ego requires a million years to obtain liberation from Maya. This natural period is greatly shortened through Kriya Yoga. Just as Jagadish Chandra Bose has demonstrated that plant growth can be accelerated far beyond its normal rate, so man's psychological development can be also speeded by an inner science. Be faithful in your practice, you will approach the guru of all gurus. I am transported to find this yoga key, long sought. Pratap spoke thoughtfully. Its unshackling effect on my sensory bonds will free me for higher spheres. The vision today of Lord Krishna could only mean my highest good. We sat a while in silent understanding, then walked slowly to the station. Joy was within me as I boarded the train, but this was Jitendra's day for tears. My affectionate farewell to Pratap had been punctuated by stifled sobs from both my companions. The journey once more found Jitendra in a welter of grief. Not for himself this time, but against himself. How shallow my trust! My heart has been stone. Never in future shall I doubt God's protection. Midnight was approaching. The two Cinderellas, sent forth penniless, entered Ananta's bedroom. His face, as he had promised, was a study in astonishment. Silently I showered the table with rupees. Jitendra, the truth. Ananta's tone was jocular. Has not this youngster been staging a hold-up? But as the tale was unfolded, my brother turned sober, then solemn. The law of demand and supply reaches into subtler realms than I had supposed. Ananta spoke with a spiritual enthusiasm never before noticeable. I understand for the first time your indifference to the vaults and vulgar accumulations of the world. Late as it was, my brother insisted that he receive Diksha into Kriya Yoga. The Guru Mukunda had to shoulder the responsibility of two unsought disciples in one day. Breakfast the following morning was eaten in a harmony absent the day before. I smiled at Jitendra. You shall not be cheated of the Taj. Let us view it before starting for Serampore. Bidding farewell to Ananta, my friend and I were soon before the glory of Agra, the Taj Mahal. White marble dazzling in the sun, it stands a vision of pure symmetry. The perfect setting is dark cypress, glossy lawn, and tranquil lagoon. The interior is exquisite with lace-like carvings inlaid with semi-precious stones. Delicate wreaths and scrolls emerge intricately from marbles, brown and violet. Illumination from the dome falls on the cenotaphs of Emperor Shah Jahan and Mumtaz Mahal, queen of his realm and his heart. Enough of sightseeing. I was longing for my guru. Jitendra and I were shortly traveling south by train toward Bengal. Mukunda, I have not seen my family in months. I have changed my mind. Perhaps later I shall visit your master in Serampore. My friend, who may mildly be described as vacillating in temperament, left me in Calcutta. By local train I soon reached Serampore, 12 miles to the north. A throb of wonderment stole over me as I realized that 28 days had elapsed since the Benares meeting with my guru. You will come to me in 4 weeks. Here I was, heart pounding, standing within his courtyard on Quiet Ray Igat Lane. I entered for the first time the hermitage, where I was to spend the best part of the next 10 years with India's Jayanavatar, incarnation of wisdom. Chapter 12. Years in my master's hermitage. Sri Yukteswar greeted me from a tiger skin on the floor of a balconied sitting room. His voice was cold, his manner unemotional. "Yes, dear master, I am here to follow you." Kneeling, I touched his feet. "How can that be? You ignore my wishes. No longer, Guruji. Your wish shall be my law, that is better. Now I can assume responsibility for your life. I willingly transfer the burden, master. My first request, then, is that you return home to your family. I want you to enter college in Calcutta. Your education should be continued." "Very well, sir." I hid my consternation. Would importunate books pursue me down the years? First father, now Sri Yukteswar. Someday you will go to the West. Its people will lend ears more receptive to India's ancient wisdom if the strange Hindu teacher has a university degree. You know best, Guruji. My gloom departed. The reference to the West I found puzzling, remote, but my opportunity to please master by obedience was vitally immediate. "You will be near in Calcutta, come here whenever you find time. Every day if possible, master. Gratefully I accept your authority in every detail of my life on one condition." "Yes?" 109, "that you promise to reveal God to me." An hour-long verbal tussle ensued. A master's word cannot be falsified, it is not lightly given. The implications in the pledge open out vast metaphysical vistas. A guru must be on intimate terms indeed with the Creator before he can obligate him to appear. I sensed Sri Yukteswar's divine unity, and was determined, as his disciple, to press my advantage. "You are of exacting disposition." Then master's consent rang out with compassionate finality, "Let your wish be my wish." Lifelong shadow lifted from my heart, the vague search, hither and yon, was over. I had found eternal shelter in a true guru. "Come, I will show you the hermitage." Master rose from his tiger mat. I glanced about me, my gaze fell with astonishment on a wall picture, garlanded with a spray of jasmine. "Lahiri Mahasaya." "Yes, my divine guru." Sri Yukteswar's tone was reverently vibrant. Greater he was, as man and yogi, than any other teacher whose life came within the range of my investigations. Silently I bowed before the familiar picture. Soul homage sped to the peerless master who, blessing my infancy, had guided my steps to this hour. Led by my guru, I strolled over the house and its grounds. Large, ancient and well-built, the hermitage was surrounded by a massive pillared courtyard. Outer walls were moss-covered, pigeons fluttered over the flat grey roof, unceremoniously sharing the ashram quarters. A rear garden was pleasant with jackfruit, mango, and plantain trees. Balustraded balconies of upper rooms in the two-storied building faced the courtyard from three sides. A spacious ground floor hall, with high ceiling supported by colonnades, was used, master said, chiefly during the annual festivities of Durga Puja. A narrow stairway led to Sri Yukteswar's sitting room, whose small balcony overlooked the street. The ashram was plainly furnished, everything was simple, clean, and utilitarian. Several Western-style chairs, benches, and tables were in evidence. Master invited me to stay overnight. A supper of vegetable curry was served by two young disciples who were receiving hermitage training. "Guruji, please tell me something of your life." I was squatting on a straw mat near his tiger skin. The friendly stars were very close, it seemed, beyond the balcony. "My family name was Priyanath Kara. I was born here in Serampore, where father was a wealthy businessman. He left me this ancestral mansion, now my hermitage. My formal schooling was little, I found it slow and shallow. In early manhood, I undertook the responsibilities of a householder, and have one daughter, now married. My middle life was blessed with the guidance of Lahiri Mahasaya. After my wife died, I joined the Swami order and received the new name of Sri Yukteswargiri. Such are my simple annals. Master smiled at my eager face. Like all biographical sketches, his words had given the outward facts without revealing the inner man. Guruji, I would like to hear some stories of your childhood. I will tell you a few, each one with a moral. Sri Yukteswar's eyes twinkled with his warning. My mother once tried to frighten me with an appalling story of a ghost in a dark chamber. I went there immediately, and expressed my disappointment at having missed the ghost. Mother never told me another horror tale. Moral: look fear in the face and it will cease to trouble you. Another early memory is my wish for an ugly dog belonging to a neighbor. I kept my household in turmoil for weeks to get that dog. My ears were deaf to offers of pets with more prepossessing appearance. Moral: attachment is blinding, it lends an imaginary halo of attractiveness to the object of desire. A third story concerns the plasticity of the youthful mind. I heard my mother remark occasionally, "A man who accepts a job under anyone is a slave." That impression became so indelibly fixed that even after my marriage I refused all positions. I met expenses by investing my family endowment in land. Moral: good and positive suggestions should instruct the sensitive ears of children. Their early ideas long remain sharply etched. Master fell into tranquil silence. Around midnight he led me to a narrow cot. Sleep was sound and sweet the first night under my guru's roof. Sri Yukteswar chose the following morning to grant me his Kriya Yoga initiation. The technique I had already received from two disciples of Lahiri Mahasaya, father and my tutor, Swami Kabbalananda, but in Master's presence I felt transforming power. At his touch, a great light broke upon my being, like glory of countless suns blazing together. A flood of ineffable bliss, overwhelming my heart to an innermost core, continued during the following day. It was late that afternoon before I could bring myself to leave the hermitage. "You will return in 30 days. As I reached my Calcutta home, the fulfillment of Master's prediction entered with me. None of my relatives made the pointed remarks I had feared about the reappearance of the soaring bird. I climbed to my little attic and bestowed affectionate glances, as though on a living presence. "You have witnessed my meditations, and the tears and storms of my sadhana. Now I have reached the harbor of my divine teacher. Son, I am happy for us both." Father and I sat together in the evening calm. "You have found your guru, as in miraculous fashion I once found my own. The holy hand of Lahiri Mahasaya is guarding our lives. Your master has proved no inaccessible Himalayan saint, but one nearby. My prayers have been answered. You have not in your search for God been permanently removed from my sight." Father was also pleased that my formal studies would be resumed. He made suitable arrangements. I was enrolled there, following day at the Scottish Church College in Calcutta. Happy months sped by. My readers have doubtless made the perspicacious surmise that I was little seen in the college classrooms. The Serampore Hermitage held a lure too irresistible. Master accepted my ubiquitous presence without comment. To my relief, he seldom referred to the halls of learning. Though it was plain to all that I was never cut out for a scholar, I managed to attain minimum passing grades from time to time. Daily life at the ashram flowed smoothly, infrequently varied. My guru awoke before dawn. Lying down, or sometimes sitting on the bed, he entered a state of samadhi. It was simplicity itself to discover when Master had awakened. Abrupt halt of stupendous snores, a sigh or two, perhaps a bodily movement. Then a soundless state of breathlessness. He was in deep yogic joy. Breakfast did not follow. First came a long walk by the Ganges. Those morning strolls with my guru, how real and vivid still. In the easy resurrection of memory, I often find myself by his side. The early sun is warming the river. His voice rings out, rich with the authenticity of wisdom. A bath, then the midday meal. Its preparation, according to Master's daily directions, had been the careful task of young disciples. My guru was a vegetarian. Before embracing monkhood, however, he had eaten eggs and fish.